Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is your host, Willem Vanderhorst. Welcome to another episode. If it's the first time you're here, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you're coming back, well, I'm glad you liked it enough to come back. So what is this show about? It's not exactly about ice cream to start with, just so you know. We do talk a little bit about ice cream. I have these cool down questions at the end. I try to like shove it in a couple of ice cream questions, but really I like the name of the show is that way because it's just kind of fun, really. I think ice cream is fun. I think ice cream has many different flavors, and I think creativity has a lot of different flavors, and I really like to explore the different flavors of creativity with a number of people that are my guests that I have conversations with, exploring who it is they are, where they come from, what inspires them. And typically, those are people that work in a variety of different aspects of the creative industries. And that could be anything from design to advertising and marketing to game design. So a lot of the people I've talked to so far revolve around design, game design, marketing, and advertising, to be fair. Although I do still intend to expand the panel and the kinds of professions to the wider areas of creative industries and maybe even art in general. But that would mean architecture. That would mean, so we already talked to people in branding. That could be public relations. That could be cinema. That could be television. That could be screenwriting. And we do have some examples of that here and there in the podcast. So welcome. And it's kind of like these candid, open conversations that are sometimes interviews, sometimes not exactly, really exploring what inspires us, what inspires these people to create what they do and where they come from and how they grew up and what are their influences and like that. So as I said, welcome. And today we have a great guest. I had this conversation with Megan Dornbruck. Megan is the host of another podcast that's quite similar to this one. And I really like the aspect that we're quite similar, called the Modifier Podcast. And Modifier is one of the podcasts under the umbrella house of the One Shot Podcast Network. One Shot is a podcast about role-playing games, based here in Chicago, actually, as well. And in the One Shot Podcast, they have recorded real play of tabletop storytelling role-playing games, I think most of the time or almost exclusively with improvisers and comedians who are interpreting these roles. And there's a number of other podcasts that are part of the One Shot Network, including the Modifier Podcast that Megan hosts. And Megan has been a gamer for many, many years. And we talk about where and how she got into gaming. And we had a really lovely conversation. So just a couple of things to note about the conversation. Unfortunately, the connection, we did this online, and the connection breaks down just a tiny bit for a few seconds, like half an hour in or so. But I managed to recover most of it. Like a few minutes later, again, there's like a tiny few seconds. And the other random thing that happened is it just so happened, I don't know if it was a mating season or something like that, but towards the end, there are cicadas like chanting, or I don't know what the right word is, singing cicadas. What do you say exactly? Noisy cicadas. And I've removed most of it, but I think at times you can hear like a little bit of a buzzing sound in the background. And those are cicadas that were just like right outside my window. And just in case you're wondering, this is not recorded professionally. I'm still doing this quite from an amateurish perspective, wherever I can, however I can, to keep it up to date and keep it to the commitment I have to be publishing every other week. So like that. And if you do appreciate the podcast, even though it's like, you know, made quite from an amateurish perspective, I try to put as much work as possible to make it at the very least audible, not to compete with the audible.com, but just to make sure that, you know, you can listen to it and it's not going to be horrible to listen to, from a sound quality perspective, I mean, of course, right? And for other people to find the show, where I'm going, it's a bit of a roundabout way to say, please leave a review for the podcast if you listen to it and if you enjoy it, and or send me some feedback and or send me some encouragements, because believe it or not, not that many people do that, and it makes a hell of a difference to my general morale to receive a message saying, hey, I really like the podcast, it's great. And even better if you can just go on your iPhone Apple podcast thing and give it 5-star and a bit of a review and say why you like the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. It helps other people find the podcast. You can also leave me a comment on Twitter. That's at ICVillem, like letters I, letters C, WILLEM. You can send me an email at W, Willem@icecreamforeveryone.net. That's the full website where you can find all of my content, the weekly newsletter, all the different podcast episodes, what I'm about and who I am. It's all at icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything spelled out, icecreamforeveryone.net. And the email is my first name, Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, @icecreamforeveryone.net. Quite simple. I will, without further ado, let you listen to the conversation with Megan, which was really lovely. And I think that's about it for now. In the midst of rainy season and beginning of fall, here is Megan Dornbrook. Hey, Megan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you for making yourself available. I'm really, really looking forward to having a conversation with you. It's great.
Yeah. I'm excited to be available, honestly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it like lately, sometimes for me, it feels like one of those, well, the famous expression of spinning plates, and you feel like you got a little bit too many or one too many and dropping more than you would wish. A little bit like that.
Yeah. A bit like that. Yes. There's definitely a lot of broken plates I'm trying not to look at right now. So.
The other side of that is that it's, you know, that means like probably life is pretty exciting right now. There's a lot going on and some stuff to be growing into, improving, learning, things like that, I guess.
That's a good way to look at it. I like that.
You break some plates on the way.
Yeah.
Like that. So, all right. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. This is great. So I was just saying offline before we started recording, and as many of the people listening to the podcast know, I moved to the States a few months ago and getting back into a groove of consistency, which ever learning that that's the most important thing supposedly for podcasts, which I've like broken that rule many times, but I'm getting back into it and looking for guests. And I was just like browsing Twitter a few weeks ago, whenever it was, and came across your profile. And I was like, oh yeah. And I was like interacting with James D'Amato from the One Shot Podcast and looking at, oh, I like the illustrations. Gaming, you're hosting a podcast, and I have like, of course, in the back of my mind, I don't know if that, but the of course part, but in the back of my mind to be having more conversations with other podcast hosts. I attended this podcast movement conference last summer in Chicago, and the most consistent advice that I've managed to read on blogs and that I heard throughout the conference, because everybody's asking like, how do I get more people to listen to my podcast? And generally speaking, the whole answer was like, well, just, you know, talk to other people on other podcasts. One, you get to learn from other people on other podcasts. And two, you know, that's just like where you get to find other people who listen to podcasts is through other podcasters, which kind of makes sense. And so all of that together, I was like, great, let's just, you know, let's have a conversation. And I listened to a few episodes of the Modifier podcast, not as much as I'd wished. And I was also looking through all the people that you've been talking to, and I was like, it was great because there's a lot of similarities with the podcast in terms of interviewing designers, which I thought would be great to talk about with you. And I'm sure I could ramble on for a while longer, but let's start at the beginning. So like some of your bios that I've been able to read online say that you live in the wrong side of Brooklyn. I didn't even know there was still the wrong side of Brooklyn.
I don't know if it's the wrong side. It's the uncool part, definitely.
Oh, uncool part. Okay, what's the uncool part then?
Well, so everybody knows Williamsburg and that whole area. That's the cool part. I live down much further into Brooklyn. Right. We call it Russian Grandma Brooklyn, and with love, just because that seems to be the majority of the population around here. And I said that once at a conference, and somebody piped up and asked where exactly I live, and I told them the train stop, and they went, "My Russian grandma lives there, so I'm justified in awesome. This." But it's great. It's quiet. There's a lot of families and Russian grandmothers and
so
Russian
delis.
Is that
kind of like closer to, because there's a part that's called Little Odessa and closer to Coney Island area?
Yeah, it's we're much closer to Coney Island. Yeah,
right. And I haven't been there in a little while, but my brother used to live in Brooklyn. Just at the moment, like he was living on Fifth Avenue, I don't know, like not too far from the park, Prospect Park.
Mm-hmm. That's up where the cool people live.
Yes, it was just becoming the cool part of it. Like at that point, it was in 2002, 2003.
Yeah.
So there was like the first cool places. Brooklyn Industries had just opened their first shop at the time. So, And are you from around there or?
No, I'm from Florida originally.
Oh, really? All right.
Yeah.
Whereabouts in Florida?
Jacksonville.
Okay.
So that's in the Northeast for people who don't know.
Yeah, I was just going to ask because I was just thinking, of course, of the hurricane right now and whether you had friends and family who were affected and.
Everybody that I know of made it out pretty okay with minimal damage. So that was good. Yeah, Jacksonville is an interesting place geographically, I feel like, because when I was growing up there, we would watch the hurricanes, you know, and you track them and everything to see where they're going and where they're headed. And something about the way the currents are or the ocean is right there, it seems to be helps them turn away from Jacksonville proper. So unless they come up the state like they did with Irma, you know, if they come at us in the water, they just kind of turn away and then like hit South Carolina. I'm sorry, South Carolina. I didn't do it on purpose. But
I talked to a few friends of mine as well who fortunately didn't have, I mean, they did have some damage, but it wasn't, you know, everybody's safe and it's just like stuff to clean up. And they're like, all right, well, just getting on with it. And like that. So fortunately, they're fine, but which is not the case of everybody. But it's, you know, it's pretty impressive hurricane season for sure. So how was your childhood? Like, did you do big family or what kind of family did you grow into?
So growing up, I had two brothers, and then the extended family was pretty big on my mom's side and a lot smaller on my dad's side, but both of them were, mostly located in Pennsylvania. So they were folks that I would see maybe once a year. So there's lots of family, just not as close with them maybe as other folks with big families. So I just sort of, even from a young age, we kind of had the family that you make around you, you know, that kind of thing. And then, I always feel a little like I'm not quite in the Navy brats club. My dad was in the Navy, but we stopped moving around when I was about 5 or 6. And we, you know, we moved around a couple times when I was very small, but my mom has some kind of magical power that I still don't question, where she just made it stop happening. And if you know anything about the Navy, like, you don't do that. You go where they tell you to go. And she just went, no, we live here now. And we lived in Florida now. So
that's great. And I understand from listening to your first episode that you, is it a visual impairment that you have? Is that right?
Yes. So,
is that from birth or?
Yep. Yeah. So I am legally blind. Both my younger brother and I were born with albinism.
Okay.
And what that does is you have little to no pigment in your eyes and your skin and your hair as well. We haven't been genetically tested because when we were born, that was like before you did that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And just based on my reading, I think we have type 2, if that means anything to anyone, which he's got like this carrot red hair. And mine is just sort of very, very blonde. But when you develop as a fetus and you don't have pigment, like that's actually an important step to the development of your eyes, I have learned in the recent years, which was crazy to me. So basically everybody who has albinism has some kind of visual impairment. It differs from person to person, in its severity and like how it manifests, but like almost definitely there's going to be something.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, even corrected, I'm still what's considered legally blind.
I did not know that. I mean, I didn't know that it came along with albinism. So is that also, cause like the first idea that came to mind was something to do with sensitivity to the sun and light,
or something. There's like, definitely a lot of that.
Okay.
Yeah. So the other part is with no pigment in your eyes, people normally, your eyes absorb light when you're looking at things and light goes into them. And in the case of my brother and I and other folks with albinism, that doesn't happen. So we get a lot of light in our eyes. And so like I just growing up over the years, everyone's well-meaning parents who would see me in a like reading or something like, don't you want the light on? And it's like, no, I'm good. I promise. And they'll like turn all the lights on. It's like, well, I didn't need to keep reading. That was fine. Like,
So did you rock up with sunglasses in high school or?
I actually didn't. And I still don't, even though I very much need to get a pair. I was, I didn't like them as a child and I'm a very stubborn person. So I just sort of go outside and suffer. I have gotten to the point where I'll wear hats. I will do that sometimes, but no, mostly I'm just an obstinate fool.
All right. And so how, and how was like life growing up over there? What kind of stuff were you into as a child, and when did the interest in, let's say, gaming start? Or I don't know what kind of interest did you have? I have a bad tendency, which is like, it goes against the grain of all interview questions to get excited and want to ask several questions at once, which I'm still trying to get out of and grow out of. But anyway.
No, that's fair. I'm trying to think, like, growing up, like, my brothers played video games, so I did that somewhat, but, you know, back in the 90s, most games were two players, and I had two brothers, so there you go. They played those, and I watched sometimes, and played when they would leave the house, and I was
a leader. Which position are you within siblings?
I am in the middle.
In the middle. All right, got it.
Yeah. And so... Yeah, my mom swears, like, never have three children because it's always going to be two against one. And it was. Sometimes it was boys against girl, and sometimes it was my younger brother and I against my older brother, and then older brother against younger, that sort of thing. But when it came to video games, it was really the two of them. That was their area. But I liked them. But I was a reader more so than anything else. I read a lot and I drew a lot. So I got into, sometime in middle school, I got into like Sailor Moon. I found the manga in, you know, some store or another, got really into those kind of the Japanese comics. Cool. and watching cartoons. There was a long stretch of my life where I wouldn't watch anything that was not a cartoon. That, like, if I stopped on a channel and it was actual live human beings acting, I was just like, no.
Yeah.
So, let's find the cartoons, please.
Great. I was going to ask about that because, like, so one of the games I think you're still developing. I mean, we're jumping around, right? But the is it called Tactical Astral Girls? No, sorry.
Yeah, so they're Astral Knights.
Astral Knights. There you go. Sorry.
Yeah, like with a K, since this is an audio medium, yes, that'll help.
That's right.
And then this game in particular, I guess it's Astral Knights : Tactical Magic. And that was my thesis that I was working on. I just finished a degree in May, in animation. And, that is, I have a project that I am still working on. I got a little set back a little bit this summer. But I think if you come out of a thesis project as intense as that, and you still love it and you don't want to set it on fire, I think that's a really good sign that there's
like
a future
sign
for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I could see some of the inspiration seeming to be like the magical girl, Sailor Moon type thing. So it was interesting to hear you bring it up. And I was wondering where it came up because so I grew up in France. And growing up in France were the first importers of Japan animation. So I grew up with Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball and et cetera.
Oh, excellent.
Which, with tons of stuff. Like, you know, in the 80s, we had everything. And Sailor Moon was more, of course, the girly kinds of stuff. So I did not watch, and I'm not as familiar with the canon as I am with, say, Dragon Ball. But my impression is that it came much later to the States, so that's why I was kind of interested or curious as to how you came across it and if whether that was was it mainstream at the time or like common to be coming across that when you came across it?
I think when I did, yes.
Yeah.
So the show would have originally started in like 93 or so in Japan, and if I was watching it in 6th or 7th grade, that's the late 90s,
yeah.
98, 99, something like that. And I watched it in the afternoons. The Cartoon Network had a block called Toonami that they still do in some form, I guess. And they would play Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball and I think like Gundam Wing and something else, you know. I didn't stick around to watch the boy shows. And I overheard somebody in my class drop the name Sailor Moon, and I followed her around for the next 2 hours, like, until I was like, no, go back to the thing that you said. What did you say? Do you watch this show? Like, trying to, like, not so subtly feel her out to see if, like, did you say what I think you said? And so at that point, I think that was pretty mainstream because everybody would get home by about Toonami time, you know, to watch cartoons. So that was pretty normal. I found people really right away in school and sort of in the fledgling forums of the internet at the time who liked that. And yeah, there were people who swore that it came on at like 6:30 in the morning on some channel like years before that. But my parents would never let me watch TV that early in the morning, so I don't know if that's true. But.
That's funny. So the inspiration and I guess the idea of this. So how would you describe this? Because I know it's a trend, like magical girls like is almost used as a genre, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. It absolutely is a genre. And I think we're seeing it a lot more because everybody who was, you know, my age or a little bit older who was watching this in their formative years, they're the content creators now. They're like Rebecca Sugar with Steven Universe. She's cited it very specifically as being an influence. What's her name? Darren. I'm blanking on her last name, but Star versus the Forces of Evil. Same thing. You know, it started as an homage to Sailor Moon and to Dragon Ball Z, actually that one. But, you know, growing up with those shows, they're turning around and are the folks who are making things.
So for anybody who's not listening to this, not at all familiar with what we're talking about, how would you describe the genre?
So the genre, it is about usually younger girls. I think Sailor Moon is sort of an exception in that they are older middle school into high school. We're seeing a lot more like elementary school now. Mm-hmm. But anyway, young school age girls who are superheroes in a way, that fight with like the main tenets are friendship, you know, amongst their team and, you know, their classmates and everything, basically winning the day through the power of friendship, but also winning because you are a girl. You are winning with the power of being a girl, whatever that might mean to you. You know, there are very, very girly girls, the pink ones with the hearts and the ribbons and all that stuff. But then there's always somebody on the team who's a tomboy, or there's, you know, somebody who's the super smart one, or, you know, they have all these different identities, but they're still like, this is how they are girls. And this is how that is a power. I think those are the two big parts. Yeah.
Fantastic. And what do you appreciate about the genre?
I really like that. I like that there is no wrong way to be a magical girl, you know, as long as you are true to yourself, then you got it. You're good. And then that sort of importance on friendship and the fact that if you can't kind of come together, this diverse group of people, I fall back on Sailor Moon as my example, just because it is the epitome of so many of these tropes. All the girls on the team were alone, essentially, you know, for some reason or another, they were outside of other social groups. And it is because they are on this team that they came together and kind of had to be friends, you know, for anything to work. They have to figure out how to get along with other people, but also it's also not a chore. It's such a weird thing to try and explain. It has changed each and every one of their lives for the better.
Great.
And that's really cool.
That is very cool. I like it. And so if you imagine, and I'm sure, and I don't know if you have or if you've ported yourself into your own game, but as in your magical girl persona, what's your specialty or power that you bring to the team?
Oh boy. I don't think I've actually thought about what my specific power would be. No, I,
well,
if you so, have a- yeah. Hmm. Let's think. Growing up, I liked Mercury because she was the one that was always reading.
Yeah.
But she is definitely way smarter and way more driven than me. But my favorite, like, I like Venus. Because in so many different iterations of Sailor Moon, she is, first of all, we have the same hair. So I always like the character who has the same hair as me. And she's an idol wannabe, which I just love. I think that she's got a lot more guts than I would have, but I really admire that about her. And so the one that I think I am would be Sailor Moon, because Sailor Moon also idolizes Venus and thinks she's the coolest. And Sailor Moon just likes to eat snacks, and she cries a lot, and I do those things. So whichever one is the one that cries a lot and eats snacks is probably me.
That's great. Do you have a favorite snack?
Yeah, so...
If you're willing to, obviously, tell listeners.
Oh, no, it's fine.
I have becoming, a bad... I can admit to a bad addiction for Doritos and Cheetos.
Yeah, it is definitely mostly, an addiction, you know, at this point. Have you heard of Popcorners?
No, I have not.
So I feel like everybody's interaction with Popcorners that I've ever met who's actually had them before is always like, I was on a flight and it was the snack and now I can't stop eating them. And I'm like, yes, exactly. Me too. So they are they're popcorn based, but they are flattened into a triangle chip. It's like if you took a rice cake that was made out of popcorn and squashed it, but it was delicious.
Wow.
Yeah, it's real. Like, there's no appetizing way to describe these things, but there's ones that have the fake cheddar flavoring on them. That's sure. Well, yeah, no, like I've.
That's where the the addictive thing is on. Yeah. Is in the flavoring powder.
It's the cheese powder. I know it is the cheese powder because if I get the plain ones, I can control myself. Yes. But this is slightly embarrassing, but I also have no shame anymore. I now have started planning my routes places on where I can swing by a Rite Aid because I know that Rite Aid carries them. I went to go play games at a friend's house and I went, there's a Rite Aid around about three blocks around that way. It's not directly on the way, but I could go there. So someone please help me.
That's very, very, that's very cool. All right. I'm going to have to look that up. Okay. And so, how did you come across tabletop RPGs or games in general? Cause you were not interested in the video games that your brothers were playing, or is it that you were not interested, or you just like, they were just hogging it?
Oh, they were hogging it. I was interested. I am like a hardcore casual garbage when it comes to video games. But specifically tabletop games, I think, I don't know when I first became aware of them, because I think it was one of those cultural osmosis things, is you're always sort of aware of Dungeons and Dragons and like the jokes that go along with it about the kind of people who play that game. Ha ha, what nerds.
Sure.
But I know for sure that at some point in high school, this one of my friends was in a group, or a couple of my friends were in a group, and they played, and it was all boys. And the one of them I definitely had a crush on, and I would like badger him and be like, can you teach me how to play the game? Can I come play the game? Like, not understanding, like in retrospect, I now understand that like Dungeons and Dragons is a campaign. You can't just like crash somebody's campaign. Like, don't do that to a person. But at the time it was like, well, why won't he play with me? But he did let me borrow his handbooks, and mostly I just looked at the pictures and thought it was pretty cool. But I started playing with some of my own friends when I was a freshman in college. We would meet, and it was mostly an excuse to eat tacos, but I'm okay with that too. But we had a good time. It was just like, you know, murder hobos kind of thing.
That's cool. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And where were you studying?
Oh, at that point I was still in Jacksonville. So I was at the University of North Florida there. Just cause it was in my hometown. So I went there.
Yeah, sure. And what were you studying?
I was doing English and graphic design. I was doing a double major, but I ended up just finishing with an English degree.
All right. And how was it like, and I don't know if this was really relevant because the first time you ended up not playing too much with them, but given it was an all-boy group, was it a bit intimidating at first? Or because I've had a few conversations with, female role players that there's always like both sides of the spectrum. Some people are like completely unfazed, but I've also heard friends that at first were like, yeah, well, I wasn't too sure. I was kind of attracted, but.
Yeah. The high school group. That's fair too. But the high school group I ended up never playing with. I just knew a couple of them around, but the group in college, I believe it was all guys except for me. I'm trying to remember who else was in the group. And I think that group was not intimidating, because I had known a couple of those guys for so many years. And some of the newer, like the guys that were less known to me, I guess they were a year or two behind me. So it's like, I'm older than them. I could beat them up. So it was a good group. Like they're good guys.
Yeah.
I played with some groups that were located, like based at my college. After that, and those got a little intimidating and like kind of turned me off to it. And they played a couple other systems, I think, too. So, like, I was starting to become aware that there were other games that weren't D&D, but, like, at the same time, definitely my interest was like, I don't know if I like these people in particular, so maybe I just won't. Maybe these aren't for me.
Yeah.
So just sort of fell out of it at the same time, which is a bummer. But
yeah, it's interesting how I mean, I think that to me it really matters who you're playing with, and it matters almost as much what you're playing, how you're playing it, and who you're playing it with.
Yes, absolutely. Right?
Just like, you know, I've traveled quite a bit, and you end up finding out that what you're visiting is great, but actually who you're hanging out with and who you get to meet is also a huge part of the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because right now I've moved to Chicago a few months ago, and like I've been busy with a few other things, but I'm like trying to get on board with like meeting people to play with at the moment, and I'm finding it surprisingly difficult. I don't know about difficult. So do you tend to play with the same group of people that you've been playing with for a long time? And do you play online as well? Or?
So I do play online. I started getting back into it just a couple years ago, and I play a lot. When I was getting back into it, I played with my fiance's friends, and they're good folks that I've known for years now. So that was fine. It's just the in-person games got hard to schedule because we're all adults with happening.
That's the other big thing, exactly.
Yep.
Yes.
and people kept moving. And and so we got to a point a couple years ago, I ran a game for some of them, but we met online. Uh-huh. And so that was easier for us to coordinate, but a little harder to keep like focused. So it was a learning experience. And then other than that, the folks that I play with mostly now are people that I've met locally through conventions.
Right.
There's the double exposure conventions are just like right across the way from me. So I go to a lot of those now, and there are some folks who will play in the city, and there are some folks that we play online, and it's just sort of, the community seems to be mostly based online, which is good. And then when you find a bunch of people in your area, you just go off together and you play. And then, the game that I just started a couple weeks ago was, some good friends that were looking out for different, ladies on the internet who were floating around. Somebody was looking for specifically women to play Dungeons and Dragons with because, that's the environment that they wanted. And, I got tagged in it, and it's a really cute, good group. So that's a nice change too. A lot of the groups that I met, the folks that I met to play with through the conventions, they're excellent people and wonderful players, but it is definitely more men than women.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have more than just one other girl in the group, at least in one of my game groups.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. And it's, some of the listeners will know, cause I mentioned it. There's a gaming podcast I participate to in French with friends in Paris. Mm-hmm. And last year, was it last year? Last year we did a survey across France, and with a big topic about, you know, women and role-playing games. And we did we recorded a big one, like after having done the research and gathering answers from people and looking at, you know, how many women are participating and comparing, it seemed to be still at a steady, I'm going to say a mistake. I can't remember if it was 15 or 30% of players, but. In any case, there's always there's always generally a majority of men. And so I'm always interested in making sure that we talk about and, you know, how do we get more people from a wider audience altogether interested in role-playing games and women in particular?
I think, I actually have a thought on that.
Sure.
Because of the way this group began was, some of the initial folks who were tweeting, their interest came from listening to podcasts that were actual plays, like The Adventure Zone.
That's great.
And I think that there was a cultural, you know, culturally we have this idea of what Dungeons and Dragons is, and we, you know, like I was saying earlier, we have these stereotypes in mind. Mm. But I don't think anybody ever came to me and said, it's a storytelling thing. Like, you're making up stories together. And I think if it had been pitched to me, I would have been like, hell yeah, like, let's do that. Let's make up stories. So this girl's interest was in things like The Adventure Zone. And I think that culturally, we, you know, like I was saying, we have this idea of what Dungeons and Dragons is and the kind of people who play it and what you do. You just sit in dark basements and you roll dice and all that sort of thing. But it is a storytelling game. And yes, that's what actual plays have taught so many people, is that you are just collaboratively telling a story. And if it had been pitched to me that way back in high school, I would have been so much more on board with the idea of playing Dungeons and Dragons or a role playing game. But that's not how it was ever explained to me. And I think that definitely, I don't know, but I think that appeals to some women and probably like some men and everybody in between. Like, there are people who probably hear, oh, roll dice in your basement and eat bad snacks and don't want to do it. But if you say it's a collaborative storytelling game, they're like, yes, yes, let's do that. Yes. So I think changing that perspective on what it is going to help a lot.
Agreed. And that's part of like when my... You know, well, but that's part of the stuff I'm interested in covering in the conversations I have on this podcast as well. Or at least the fact that I cover and talk with multiple kinds of designers, not only gamers, but so it mixes things up a little bit and hopefully brings some light and insight and wanting to game to people who don't normally do that or don't normally play games that much. So,
yeah.
And, great. Fantastic. So what is it that you're playing? You said you're playing the Dungeons and Dragons with all female cast. And are you playing any other games these days, or do you have any favorite games lately?
So I am doing, I've been running a lot of Dragon Age, both just for me for fun and for podcast reasons. So the one group I was playing with online, our Game Master did a thing they called Pilot Season, which we played basically one session of six or seven different games, just whatever we thought would be interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the approach that some of the groups I've been in lately have taken, are just sort of like, hey, we all want to play together. Why don't we take a couple sessions to like feel out different systems and see what we like? So we've played some Headspace. We've played like Blades in the Dark. We've played some Golden Sky Stories. We tried Torchbearer. Gosh, I'm trying to think what else. And then there's a group too that sometimes meets around that specifically wants to play like lighter games and LARPs and things like that. And sometimes I'll go to those. So I've played, I feel like, a little bit of everything at this point.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good panel of stuff. Like, even there's a few ones in there that I didn't know, like Blades in the Dark. I don't think I've heard of. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, that one just, I think it's finally available in copy. I got my Kickstarter book not ago. It's a John Harper game. And it's like loosely based on Apocalypse World, but like there's so much more to it. You're playing like a gang of thieves and you're fighting for turf against, you know, all the other gangs in the city. And it's very like, there's like ghosts and It like it's spooky and weird. It's not like Sharks and Jets kind of thing. It's like, oh, this is a city that might be haunted probably, and there's weird mysterious occult things happening. Also, you're a gang, good luck. So it's very fun.
That sounds quite interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And so let's see, where should we go from here? How did Modifier come about? You host the Modifier podcast. Yeah, where does that come from?
So this is a fun story that I have told once before. Good. And so Modifier is the podcast that I do on the One Shot Podcast Network. And the gist of the show is that I talk to folks who hack and mod games, and basically talk to them about their experience doing it, why they do it, what kind of gameplay experience they want people to have. And the beauty of it is that I can basically talk to anybody about anything, because everything is a mod of some other game. But it started because my fiance was listening to the One Shot Network, their family of podcasts. He got into it before I did, and he recommended it to me. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll look into like, there's one that James does called Critical Success, which is a lot of it tips and things for game masters, or at least that's what it began as at the time. And I was like, oh, I'm about to get into start running games. I'll give these a listen, because I overly research anything that I'm about to do.
Yeah.
So if I can listen to it, then that's even better. And my fiance ended up going to Gen Con that year with friends. And he went to a one-shot panel. They do like their network thing. And it was a small meetup. And they were talking about how they were going to be looking for some help soon. And he comes home and he tells me about it. He's like, Meg, I think this would be a good thing for you. And we were both under the impression that they were looking for somebody to do like behind the scenes stuff, do like web work, do maybe some graphic design, that sort of stuff. And I'm like, I'm a great helper. I can do that. Yep. And so I reached out to James on Twitter and we became friends we became acquaintances basically. He's like, I like your profile. I'll follow you. And I was like, that's cool. I like your podcast. And some weeks go by and I get this email from him that's like, hey, you're all people that are on my list of folks that are interesting, and I think you should pitch a show to me. And I was like, oh no, there's been a serious miscommunication. Like, I just want to like manage your Facebook or something like this. I'm going to have to send him an email explaining what I thought was going on. And I don't answer my emails right away because I'm terrible. And so I woke up the next day or a day later or something, and I'm looking at this email and I went, what if I pitched a show? What would that look like? And I have these moments in my life where I am pretty sure my body is possessed by some alien spirit and it just does something. And then I come back and I went, oh, yes. I just did that thing. Holy shit. And so that was one of my moments. I went, oh, I have pitched a show to this person. Oh, God.
Yes. Taken over by the muse of inspiration or some kind of other similar.
Yes.
Legend. Great. That's fantastic.
I'll go with that. Yeah. So, and that's sort of how, what happened is they liked my pitch and they liked, Alex Roberts' pitch at the same time. And we had both pitched to do a show every other week and they went, perfect. You guys can have alternating time slots. And,
great.
And I was doing a show.
So you started with the idea of doing, talking to people about how they modify and hack games?
The core idea that I started with was I was thinking, what if I did a show that looked at how we make games more accessible and took a real disability focus to it, being a pet interest of mine. And I wasn't sure how long I could run with that. So I kind of broadened it into, talking to people who do anything to modify a game, you know, for whatever their reasons are. And that has worked out pretty well. And we come back to accessibility a lot on the show. There's several episodes now that touch on it. And it's something that we talk about, even in some of the other episodes. So
that's really great. I mean, I've only listened to the first episode that was along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a great question. So the, Sandra, who's one of the participants and contributors to Les Voix d'Altarid, the gaming podcast in France I mentioned earlier, does a lot of GMing and is very interested in accessibility and making sure her games are accessible. So she runs a game with visually impaired and blind people. She runs another game with deaf people.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, which is what we talked about. So, and she runs games for children. She runs games. So she participates in a number of different organizations that are promoting gaming in general for, you know, a variety of different kinds of minorities who might not have access to it or for whom it's more difficult. So really interesting to talk with her on a regular basis about what's going on in those different departments. And so I remember talking with her about running games for blind people with somebody who was translating in sign language when she was GMing. So that was really, that sounded really interesting. And she said it's very challenging and you realize, and she started realizing how many of the, so that's when she started realizing the things that she relies on easily that actually she had to readapt completely. Mm-hmm. And similar kinds of lessons running games for visually impaired as well as blind people. She was like, she assumed it would be easier because, you know, you're telling the story and using audio really, right?
Mm-hmm.
To play a role-playing game, which she was correct. And at the same time learned about how many things we just take it for granted and assume, and like there's a lot of gaps and a lot of things that you have to do differently that I'm trying to remember off the top of my head right now something, but I can't remember. But it's definitely a fascinating area and important to include people. Sorry, go
ahead. Yeah, no, I was gonna say, does she speak English? Does she want to be on a podcast?
I will ask her, and I think I'm gonna tell her to listen to this, and I think it would be a fantastic idea. Several of them talk English. She speaks, I'm gonna go ahead and say, like, many French people speak way better than they'll let on.
Okay.
And they understand very well. And I'll send you their details, and they're a good bunch. And I've recorded an episode with them in English. She talked and she did talk a little bit.
Okay. That would be amazing. That's one of the things, the accessibility episodes that we have been fairly heavily focused on visual impairments, partly because that's my wheelhouse and, sure. and partly because that seems to be one of the easiest ones to talk about, but I would love to discuss, auditory, hearing disabilities, that sort of thing. That's something that we haven't touched on at all. Yeah. But yeah,
I think it would be really interesting. The main thing she was saying is actually it really takes a long time. It takes mm-hmm. a lot longer to be translating and to sign and that there was, but I think it would be fascinating to talk with her actually. And talking mm-hmm. about accessibility and visual impairment, that this is like a crossover that just like pops into mind. And I always like, so the main idea, I mean, I'm always working on what the main idea of my show is, but it's really having conversations with creators of a variety of types and to talk about, you know, what do you create? What are you interested in? Where does it come from? What inspires you? And how is it all brought together? And a very good friend of mine or a good friend of mine, an ex-colleague works for a design company in London, and he started his own spin-off, well, his personal project within his wider company. And it's a project called Wayfinder. I don't know if you ever heard of that. So Wayfinder
I'm not sure about the name, but
no, it's okay. Wayfinder is this organization that he's started with a number of people, and the goal is to create an open standard for audio wayfinding and guiding in public spaces. Thanks to an audio app and beacons. So he's done a number of different trials and tests, and they've had talks at the UN for the guidelines to be adopted. And so it's like a really interesting piece of work. And he's really looking at, you know, as more and more of our devices and everything goes to voice, mm-hmm. he went to look at what's going on in the world of people that are visually impaired and blind. And I think that's where the future of interfaces is going to be anyway. So we should be looking at like, how can we help and what's going to be, what would really make a difference? And it was interesting because he started in the direction of, I think, wanting to design an application. And then they split it and pivoted a little bit towards actually what's going to make the most difference is to raise awareness for the need for international guidelines and a set of standards that like is an open source set of standards for how should technology and audio guidance be managed.
That is amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
I was thinking back on smartphones being able to carry around GPS in your pocket. You know, yes. I got my first smartphone when I was 24 or 25, and that's the first time I felt like I could actually, you know, I was in a strange town with a bunch of friends. We were going to a conference, but I could actually split off from my group and I could go where I wanted to go because I had a map that knew where I was and could tell me how to get back to the convention center or how to meet them at a restaurant. And that my life has been so dramatically different since that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, sometimes it's hard to read your phone outside if you're like me and you are, you know, are super light sensitive. So I think also having that in, you know, come through an audio would be like having that happen to me all over again, just sort of open my world up even more. So that's awesome. I love that.
I'll send you the details, and I'm still trying to get him on my podcast. He's super busy all the time, but but you can see the video, and so they've done several tests where you can see somebody walk into a subway station in London, and the app is open and they're listening, and like they as soon as they hit a beacon, it goes, okay, there's an escalator to your right. This train is going in that direction, and then they go, and like 50 yards later, there's another beacon going, okay, now like this is like this embranchement is going there, this embranchement is going there. So that if it's the first time walking into a new city, into a subway station, and you're blind, you can actually do it by yourself.
Yes, that's amazing. I want it. Cool. Good for him.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So you got your podcast off the grain. That's really great. And how was it for you? Because that's this one part I'm really interested in. You know, both improving my own conversations and interviews I'm having with people and designers. How are you finding the experience of choosing who to contact and who to look for and preparing for interviews? Like, what's your process?
Oh boy. So that is something that is constantly changing as I learn more things. And I think the first thing I do want to say is like having the network is is amazing, and it's very, very helpful to have this group of people who are like James and Kat started the network, and they run everything, and like they want all of us to succeed, and they're very, very here for whatever we need. And so that has been awesome. So getting started, I had a couple people in mind that I wanted to talk to, folks that I had met at conventions, like Elsa in the first episode. And you know, as soon as I met her, I was like, I want to talk to you. You are exactly the kind of person that has thoughts that I would like to share. And just talking to her at that convention and telling her straight up front, you know, like, I think that this panel that you did was awesome. I am doing this show, and here's the purpose of my show. Do you want to come on it? Almost everybody says yes when you say, do you want to come on my podcast? So there's that too.
Yeah.
It's definitely going out and meeting people and seeing things and learning about what's happening in the spaces. And just reaching out to folks that I think are interesting. Sometimes there have been episodes that were, companies or individuals came to me or to the network and said, hey, we're starting this project. Do you have a good fit for us? We would love to be on one of your shows, that sort of thing. And we'll talk about it as a network and decide, you know, oh, is this a better fit for maybe Jim's show, or should James do like a play of the game or something? Or is it better suited for my show? And we talk about it amongst ourselves and kind of figure out that best fit. So sometimes I get guests that way. But those are pretty much the only two ways. And I am trying to be a lot more proactive in finding voices that we haven't heard before, which sometimes happens and sometimes doesn't. We try not to overload the network with too much of the same stuff in the same weeks. So, yeah. But like right now, Numenera 2 is like their Kickstarter just happened, and it's the big new thing. And that was my interview was with Monty this week, and One Shot was a playthrough of Numenera 2 this week. You know, so there's going to be some overlap when there's a big thing in the industry, because there's a lot of people in the industry, but it's still not huge.
No,
you know.
It's not.
So when there's a big like milestone thing like that, you're all going to be on the same page. But looking, the benefit of my of modifiers like perspective is we want to talk to anybody who's messing with games, you know. And so I've had folks on that were just friends of mine that no one has ever heard of before, that just made a game and they played it with their home group, and that's as far as it went. But we talked about like what that process was like, and just sharing those projects with the rest of the community gets their wheels turning and they get excited, and that helps like my friend get excited, because now people are like really into what he's doing. And there's a lot, I love the back and forth.
Yeah.
Like the,
that's great.
That makes happen.
Very, very cool.
And I think I'm getting off track, but
no, not at all. It's perfect. It's exactly what I was curious about. And does that take a lot of your time? Do you still keep a day job, or?
So right now I do not have a day job, but I would love one.
Right. Well, that's, if anybody listens, looking for somebody on the uncool side of Brooklyn.
Yeah. Right. I have lots of skills. Please hire me. I was doing it while I was a full-time student. And so that is a lot happening. And so that's why a modifier does come out every 2 weeks, is that was a more manageable schedule.
Yeah.
And it does take some prep work, because I do like to do my research as much as I can before I talk to somebody. And sometimes I'm able to do that really well, and sometimes I'm not able to do that as well as I would like. And I like to be able to have enough lead time to solicit questions on the Twitter,
sure.
You know, say, get some of the listener perspectives, because they ask some questions that I would never think to ask. And that's awesome.
Yeah, that's something that I'm way behind in. I know exactly what you're talking about, but not feeling willfully unprepared for conversations. And then there's like tons of people I want to reach out to invite to the podcast, and I keep putting it to later. Either I'm busy, or I want to create, you know, invite this writer, designer, but I should really read their game. I have the PDF.
Yeah.
I've not done that yet, so I'm not going to invite them because I'm going to look silly.
That can get very daunting, especially when the folks have long games that they have written. So, sometimes if I can get through enough of it, like the basics, that I have maybe two or three very game specific questions, then I'm like, I'm good. That's good. That's what we're going to get to. And then everything else will be kind of generic questions, not generic, but like, I have some standbys that I like a lot that get some really good answers, and then just sort of see where the conversation goes.
Yeah.
Which can be, that's I think one of the hardest things has been because I like to make outlines of my questions, but I also want to see where the conversation goes, but sure. I also want to make sure we get to all the questions. So kind of walking that line of picking up the threads that they lay down, but also making sure we get to all the good stuff. It's a very interesting skill still trying to learn. Yeah,
I have a lot to learn. Absolutely. No, it's rich, which is great because there's I'm certainly not going to get bored anytime soon. There's tons to be learned for sure. Yeah. Cool. All right. So I think we're going to look at wrapping up. And as it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, I have what I usually like to call the cool down questions at the end.
Okay.
Revolving around somehow ice cream that I try to jam in there.
A good topic.
Yes, exactly. Well, so if it's a good topic, good. Do you have a favorite flavor?
I do. It is chocolate marshmallow.
All right. Okay. So wait, what is the difference? Do you have marshmallow in Rocky Road?
I think marshmallow there is in Rocky Road. I don't usually eat Rocky Road though.
Because I can't remember what the difference is. I don't remember seeing a chocolate one with marshmallow, but I guess it's something available.
It used to be kind of very regional. And so like it's a favorite just because like that's a thing that I could only get at my grandmother's, you know, like that's what her area had. But I think it's spread out a little bit more. But it's just chocolate ice cream with like marshmallow marbled through it kind of.
Sounds delicious. So
it's very good.
Excellent. Do you remember, and this is like some of the dangers of these questions, sometimes people just say no, which is totally fair because they're strange questions. Any ice cream related events in a role playing game?
Well, yes, actually. I just recently played with the Lawful and Orderly group. They play on Twitch. They play a 5e Dungeons and Dragons, and I guested for them 1 week, and I was a dwarf sorcerer. I was an ice cream sorcerer.
An ice cream sorcerer? What does that even mean?
she had an ice cream wagon, and all of her magic was very cold-based, very That's useful great. For her profession. Yes, I like her a lot.
And was that a character you made up, or was that given by the group that you're playing with?
Yeah, that was me. That's great. That was mine. Yeah. I was in a very ice cream mood that week, so.
Excellent. That's good fun. All right. And some of my other interests, because it's also part of my day job, and some of the other kinds of guests that I talk to are around design and technology and advertising. Talking about advertising, is there anything that comes up to mind as an ad that is particularly or commercial that's been particularly memorable that might be, you know, from the past or something recent, either way?
That's a good question, and I feel like this is like I've had the answer to this at points in my life.
That's okay.
They'll just sort of come unbidden. Like, why do I remember that that Collect commercial, you know, from 1994? I don't know specifically, but I will say that I guess it is sort of a form of advertising, but I am a sucker for good packaging.
Yes,
it is. And that will make me buy a nice package will make me buy just about anything. So,
is there an example that you remember of something you bought recently because you liked the packaging?
Yeah, I buy more than I should at David's Tea because they just know how to get me.
Yeah.
I like tea a lot, and I was faithful to other tea companies before, but their stuff is very cute. I'm a convert.
Excellent. That's great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And then this is just circling slightly back, but talking about design and maybe even technology, but in terms of accessibility, what have you come across recently that got you – that was particularly interesting or thought was exciting in terms of new designs that might be technology or not regarding accessibility either on its own or gaming-wise perhaps?
That one's hard because I feel like there's not a lot. I feel like I run into problems more than elegant solutions. One of the one of the things I like, there's I just spoke to Faye Onyx from Unfamiliar Heroes in one of my more recent episodes, and we're going to have the second half real soon. She brings up at one point the, and I don't know who to credit this to off the top of my head, but if you check out our show notes, we'll have it there. Yeah. Someone has talked about the collectible card game, you know, things like Magic the Gathering, those yep. sorts of, like, I don't play those because they're very difficult for me to play and to see,
right.
But folks play them online. And the idea to have to enlarge the text and have it in like a scroll box.
Okay.
If you could do that on the computer, which seems really smart to me. It's not a thing that we can apply to real life, but it's a way to fix the interface on a on the computerized version of the game. So I thought that was pretty cool and might actually get me to play something. I don't know that anyone has implemented it yet, but uh-huh. There's a I believe it's a woman that had that idea out there, and I will credit that appropriately on our great. Podcast.
All right, but certainly an interesting cool. one. All right, thank yeah. you. Perfect. All right, well, that was a really great conversation. So let's wrap things up and make sure that we yeah. everybody listening knows where to find you online. And so if they just, to start with, they search Modifier Podcasts and Modifier One Shot Podcast, they'll find it, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can find Modifier at oneshotpodcast.com. That is where you're going to find all the episodes. I am also very active on Twitter, both under Modifier Podcast on Twitter, and my home base, my garbage Twitter, is Meglish, M-E-G-L-I-S-H.
Yep.
And then my site is meglish.com, and you can find all of my stuff there. Illustrations, animations, game information, links to Patreon info for Tactical Magic. Basically everything kind of spews out from that website.
Great.
You can find whatever you need, yeah.
Excellent. And anywhere you're going to or people, I don't know if you're going to any conventions or anything that's on your radar events-wise coming up?
Yes. So November, the plan is to do Metatopia, Akatacon, and then PAX Unplugged. So if you're going to any one of those three cons, I'm planning on being there. I may be an actual corpse by the time PAX Unplugged happens because that is three conventions in a row.
I was going to say that's a like big plan. All right. That's exciting.
Yeah. We'll see. It's ambitious.
Good. Excellent. All right. Well, we will definitely be published online before then, so people will be cool. able to find you that. That's great. Thank you so much for your time. This was a fun conversation, Meg.
Thank you. I really had a good time.
Okay, that's another episode gone by. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Megan as much as I did. I thought it was a really fun conversation, and she's got a lot of things going on, a lot of different conventions that you could hear at the very end of the podcast. I recommend checking out the Modifier podcast, particularly if you're into gaming, for sure. But if you're interesting conversation with creators as well, I would say, for sure. And you'll also see, if you look at her podcast list, we have a few guests in common. So, like that. What else? That's about it for today, tonight, this afternoon, this morning, whenever you're listening. But I'm just going to repeat, if you enjoyed this and you're still listening to it now, and I guess you've enjoyed it enough to still listen, why don't you take another extra minute and post a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast, to give it a thumbs up on Stitcher, for example, or send me a message just to say, hey, thank you. I really appreciate the podcast. It's great. Share it with a friend. I just want more people to listen to this podcast. So I'm sure there's a share button. You can forward it by email. You can send it on Facebook. Share the episode and tell your friends about it if you liked it. And that's about it. Thank you again for listening. Have a fantastic time, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.